bonus.
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Justin, your elated Seahawks superfan, coming off of just a huge, huge win. You'll hear me talk to Pod Vader about that later. Such a good week of football. So many lead changes in some of these great games. Just real quick from my perspective, I really thought the Seahawks were going to lose this game, just given all the obstacles they had to overcome, flying across the country, going against the Patriots, coming off of a bye, being on short rest, being without Michael Bennett. But man, the players came to play. Cam Chancellor was great in his return to action. Russell Wilson was absolutely superhuman. Doug Baldwin was great. CJ Prosize. I look at this guy, I think he's basically the next Matt Forte. He can run and he can catch, and he does both really, really well. Once we get Thomas Rawls back, that's going to be a deadly backfield. And that offensive line group seems to have finally come around a little bit. I'd like to see it a few more times before I'm really sold. But man, that's awesome. We'll cover that one a little bit later. First, I want to talk about our sponsor, BetDSI. That's BetDSI.com. That's the place to go for all of your online gambling needs. You can bet on football, sports, non-sports. If you had money on Donald Trump going into this election, you probably made out like a bandit, so good for you. Use our promo code FANUP10 to get a free $10 plus a 100% bonus on your first deposit. That's BetDSI. They're fast, easy, safe. They pay out quickly. On that note, let's get to our first game, the Sunday night game. All right, this is Justin, your Seahawks superfan, here with our leader, the intrepid Jay Pod Vader. Jay, we just watched an incredible game. These, you know, your team and mine, they seem to always have absolutely fantastic games. So just right off the top of your head, the game just ended. We're jumping right into it. How are you feeling right now?
Oh, not very good. Not very good at all. You suspect that, you know, with 2 weeks to prepare, short week, I mean, all those things were mentioned numerous times in the game, that the Patriots would come out on top. And unfortunately, sloppy play was the difference in this game.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. Russell Wilson looked absolutely terrific, but he definitely got an assist from a defense of the Patriots that's usually very spot on. Multiple blown coverages leading to big plays for my Seahawks. Any idea what was going on there?
None. It was funny because you had mentioned while we were watching the game and talking back and forth that, you know, the Seahawks don't necessarily do anything outrageous. You know, it's all pretty much vanilla. And I think the Patriots were sort of outsmarting themselves. I think they were trying to do some different things with their coverage and some zone coverages that just got blown. And really the difference of this game was the touchdown they let up at the end of the first half with three really ridiculous plays that should never have been allowed. But the first one, I forget exactly how the first one happened, but I remember the second one was a short underneath pass that Prosize got like 12 yards on. And that's because everybody was out deep. And then the touchdown, Logan Ryan let Baldwin go and was yelling for Chung to cover him, and Chung never came back to cover Baldwin, and Baldwin was left wide open for the touchdown. I mean, that's just, I mean, that's, I yell at my own kids in flag football about knowing who you're supposed to be covering, never mind professionals. And then the fumble by Edelman, that one, that was the killer, the dagger. And I mean, we can talk about the no holding call that should have been a holding call in the end zone on Gronk to end the game. But I mean, it should never have come down to that in the first place.
Yeah, and of course, from my perspective, you know, this was an incredibly back and forth game. I didn't expect to win. Like you said, Patriots off of a bye, Seahawks coming off Monday night, so short week, flying all the way across the country, no Michael Bennett. Against a team that, let's be honest, has been clearly the best team in the NFL. As much as I like my Seahawks, there's not a team around that I would pick to win in this. I thought I was being a bit of a homer by calling for a relatively close score. So this definitely caught me off guard. But, I mean, you're definitely right. You know, those blown coverages, that touchdown at the half was huge and caught me by surprise. Everybody in the stadium could see Ryan yelling at Chung to get in position to make that play. And yeah, like I said, the Seahawks don't do anything vanilla. I mean, they don't do anything complex. It's very vanilla. They're not trying to scheme anybody. They're just trying to win matchups. And they seem to do that throughout the day, at least enough of the time. The Patriots offense, though, move the ball pretty much at will. In addition to those blown plays, you know, the turnover was very one-sided. I mean, there was that interception, that fumble that was lost, plus two fumbles that the Patriots managed to keep. And this is a team that is typically very, very good at protecting the football. Are these fluky to you? Are these signs of trouble? What's your assessment of that?
No, I mean, the Edelman fumble, I mean, that was just good defense. And I mean, we saw a lot of that today. With defenders stripping the ball out of the receiver's hand. I thought the whistles were a little bit late. You know, I'm used to hearing whistles really quickly, but I guess Gene Tchatchour likes to swallow it. And the whistles, they let them play a little bit more than I'm used to seeing in a football game. And I think that's one thing that is definitely missing in the NFL is consistency. With the officiating, it's not so much, you know, they're going to get calls wrong, but just be consistent with how you're being wrong. And that doesn't seem to happen, which is very odd.
There was a
pass interference call in this game on the Patriots, and then literally on the next drive, there was a similar situation with the Seahawks and no flag. And it was like, wait, who's the home team here?
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. You know, you and I will disagree on some of the specifics of certain calls. Obviously, I was a big fan of that last play call at the end. But an observation that I made when we were talking about that a little bit just chatting is that it seems like big football players, right? Your Rob Gronkowski's, your Cam Newton's, your Julio Jones, these guys don't really get interference calls. And the rule book doesn't say, you know, if offensive player is greater than 250 pounds, You use these rules. If less than, you use these rules. And so that consistency, I think, is a serious problem. I mean, there's no reason why, big players should take as many shots as they do. This kind of goes back to the Megatron days. People would just tee off on him, and he would still make plays, but I can't help but wonder what sort of impact that had in his career. Speaking of big players, though, those tight ends, still showed up. Rob Gronkowski only had a couple catches, but they were all key catches. And Martellus Bennett, I mean, you know, just as a pure tight end, if Gronk is the number one, is Bennett in the conversation for like somewhere in the top five with him?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, Martellus Bennett might be the 1B. That was the beauty of when they signed Bennett, and it's been the beauty all season. Those two tight ends and using them to our advantage. I mean, while the Pats did move the ball up and down the field pretty much at will, they couldn't punch it into the end zone, which was a little odd. That's also odd to see. You know, a lot of weird things, you know, on that last sequence, Brady fumbling QB sneak. He's always been very good at the QB sneak. So that was a weird play, just a lot of weirdness. Ultimately, not worried, although I am slightly concerned now when you look at the overall landscape of the AFC. I mean, there are now four teams essentially vying for that top spot now, with the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Raiders, and the Broncos. It's going to be an interesting end of the season for sure. As the seeding will fall into place.
I agree with you on that, although to be fair, here's the next teams you guys play. The 49ers, the Jets, the Rams, the Ravens. Not exactly a murderer's row coming up, so I can't help but think that you're going to get back on track really quick. So a lot of people are saying this is a potential Super Bowl preview. How do you react to that?
I think it could be. I think, you know, the Seahawks clearly played the Patriots well. Now they just got to show that they can do this consistently because they haven't shown that much consistency this year so far. You know, I don't know what your rest of the schedule looks like, but I'm pretty sure you have the Cardinals again. Not that the Cardinals are looking all that strong, but, you know, I'm not a believer in the two rookies in Dallas. I think eventually their rookiness is going to catch up to them at some point, and it's going to be at a critical point for the Cowboys, unfortunately.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think that these are the two best teams in these two conferences. I think that it's a combination of both these teams being strong and my Seahawks kind of finally hitting their stride a little bit, and the rest of the conference is being pretty weak. I think a normal year, these Cowboys would not have such a good record because I think they're good but not great. So I definitely think this has to at least be the favorite. And Neil, if you're listening, you better have these two teams right up there at the very tip-top of your power rankings. All right, so from there, Pod, I'm going to let you go. I know you're 3 hours in the future, so it's crazy, crazy late at night there. So I'm going to wrap this up, slap it together, get it out there for the listeners.
Awesome, Justin. Good job, as always.
All right, thank you, Jay. Have a good night.
Yep, it's me, your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and I'm here to recap all of the early games on this Sunday with as many superfans as we can get a hold of. We have fans walking away from games as usual, some on the back of Uber, some still recovering at home from either their losses or their wins. I myself am in a bit of a state of of a variety of emotions, I'll just say that. And we're going to jump into my game first here for a lot of reasons. One, I'm just going to admit this has been a stressful week for me. I really felt like I needed a good Chiefs win here to sort of right the ship, and man, it did not look like that is what I was going to get. The Chiefs ended up winning this game 20-17 on the road in Carolina, and yet they did not hold a lead until the point at which time expired at the end of this game. The Panthers jumped out to a big lead here. It was 17-3 for seemingly the entire game. And in reality, that was how things were at half. But the Chiefs basically got nothing going. They had an opening field goal drive, and then it was a series of three and outs, which were really, I mean, they really sputtered based on just a ton of missed opportunities. There were at least three drops in the first half. I think there were probably something like four or five on the game. And each one of those, they tended to be on these really critical third downs. And all would have been 20-plus yard plays, but just the balls just bounced off the hands of the receivers. I mean, this was really one of those games I had been sort of dismissing the idea that the absence of the Chiefs' number one wide receiver, Jeremy Maclin, was really going to be too much of an issue in this game. But it really seemed to be that case because he is the most sure-handed player on this team. He's the guy that Alex Smith really likes to go to when we just really need a completion. And he wasn't there. Albert Wilson, who was the number two last year, he had himself a couple of drops, really running some of the same routes that you'd probably see Maclin on. So he then started seeing his targets disappear, and suddenly Tyreek Hill jumped out. Tyreek Hill has been just a phenomenon so far this year for the Chiefs. He ended up this game with 10 receptions for 89 yards. He also had a run on a sweep for 12 yards. And it honestly just blows my mind. This guy, once again, if you haven't heard me talk about him on the previous pods over the summer, he's got a lot of baggage. I mean, you know, you have a lot of these domestic violence cases where it's sort of he said, she said, and the league is right to very much come down on the side of the victim, given some of the legal resources these guys have, and just you definitely don't want to allow a culture of impunity. But even in most of those cases, either it's settled out of court or there are never charges or doesn't go that far. With Tyreek Hill, he pleaded guilty to assaulting his pregnant girlfriend before this season, actually, you know, last year. Was booted from his school, ended up playing a season at, I believe, Southern Alabama or one of the more minor Alabama schools. The Chiefs drafted him in the fifth round, and he's just been turning heads ever since. As soon as he was drafted, he was a lightning rod for the fan base. A lot of people were unhappy that we got him at all. And man, he's really shown up in this game. But I can't spend too much time talking about him because I got to talk about this game. Like I said, this was an absolute domination by the Panthers for the majority of the game. They were able to really move the ball at will. I was totally wrong in the way that I described what I thought was going to happen in terms of the matchups between our cornerbacks and their large wide receivers. in the Superfan battle we recorded on Thursday. I thought that, you know, we're a really good man team. These guys are going to be in the hip pockets of these guys. It doesn't, and I was looking at it from the standpoint of they have to be big because Cam throws, you know, the errant pass here and there. And there's just not going to be space. There's not going to be big windows. The opposite ended up being true. They didn't even try to do a whole lot of deep stuff. It was largely just, we're just going to keep throwing these like 7, 8 to 10 yard slants at you guys. And yeah, your cornerback will be right in the hip pocket of the receiver, but Kelvin Benjamin is like 6'5" with long arms. And no matter what, like you're not going to be able to get into position fast enough to stop that pass. He's just too big of a target. We pass it just a little bit ahead of him, and even if you're in the perfect position, you can't stop it. And so they were just grinding out these long drives against the Chiefs. In particular, there was a 20-play drive in the third quarter, which basically sucked up the entire third quarter, where the Panthers drove back. And at just the right moment, the Chiefs' defense got stingy. They got themselves two big sacks, and the Panthers were suddenly facing a 4th and 30, backed up almost to midfield after 20 plays. And so they had to punt it. I mean, 20 plays, and they were not even able to attempt a field goal. After that, the Chiefs came back with another field goal drive. But then it was really, you know, when we talk about the defense standing up, and this is the part of our battle that I was totally correct on, was that the guys that were going to really step up in this game and they were going to have the most important stats, the most important moments, they were on the defensive side. Because, we, you know, when this game was still technically within reach, but definitely didn't look that close, you know, Cam Newton takes over, still ahead, 17-6, moving the ball, and he throws, the Chiefs throw, you know, they dialed up a really good blitz that got two free runners in his face, and so he just threw one, and Eric Berry got the pick and just kept running, kept on trying to find a way to weave down there. And ended up taking it in for the touchdown. The Chiefs then do a 2-point conversion. That makes it suddenly from a 17-6 game. This is now a 17-14 game with just a few minutes left. And, you know, then the Chiefs, once again, they keep moving. They end up getting they move the ball. They get another field goal, 17-17. But they still left on quite a bit of time for the Panthers, and the Panthers actually ended up getting the ball with good field position with a little bit less than a minute left. And you're thinking that Cam Newton, I mean, he's going to be able to move the ball 20 yards. There's just no way that the Panthers let this one slip away. Few passes, they're getting closer, and then they throw a pass that actually would have gone for a first down, a critical first down for them, to Kelvin Benjamin. And Marcus Peters comes up to him, and just in the weirdest way possible, just snatches the ball out of Kelvin Benjamin's breadbasket after he takes the first couple steps with the ball. He runs down about 20 yards, puts the Chiefs into field goal position. They run one more run that they get like 12 yards with Spencer Ware, make it a short field goal, kicked up, and as time expires, the Chiefs win 20-17. Just an absolutely mind-blowing, crazy game. One in which, throughout that whole third quarter, you could have cooked an egg on my face. I was just so red-hot with rage at how this team was performing. But to see them pull it out is great. The Chiefs moved to 7-2 into the top of the division. For the Panthers, you know, they were really hoping this could be the game that sparks their turnaround this season. They fall to 3-6, and I think they're still a dangerous team. But, you know, 6 losses at this stage of the season, that's going to be really difficult to recover from. But enough about this game. If you want to hear any more of my ravings about this, I am always available to rave, and you can find me at Clayton Nicholas on Twitter. We now move on to the Philadelphia Eagles and their 24-15 win over the Atlanta Falcons at home in Philadelphia. I'm here with two fans, both in the Atlanta area, oddly enough, and it is our Philadelphia superfan James here in Atlanta, who is quite happy that the Eagles have sort of shaken off some of those jitters that they had over the last few weeks and came around for the win. How did you guys make this one happen?
Ground and pound, mostly. A heavy dose of Ryan Matthews. His resurgence today was very huge. Total rushing yards, over 200. Keeping Matt Ryan in the offense, this high-powered Atlanta offense, off the field for the majority of the game, and just dominating time of possession, really not letting them get into any type of consistent rhythm to do anything effectively when they had the ball. And aside from that one big play to Gabriel in the second half, you know, pretty much held them in check for the most part. You know, Julio Jones still got his yards, but total defensive effort and the offensive line stepped up today.
Good stuff. And Tim, I know you're not too happy about this result. 15 points is fairly low for what you've come to expect out of this high-flying offense. What went wrong for you guys?
I mean, he said it. They had 16 more minutes of possession than we did. That's insanity. So thanks, Philadelphia, for showing the rest of the league how to beat the Falcons. Really appreciate that. And to be honest, like, Nick, what's the one thing I say every single time the Falcons win? What does Matt Ryan do every time the Falcons win? He gets it to so many receivers. Julio had 10 catches. Next was Devontae with 3. You can't do that. Like, I don't care. Like, you cannot win games like that. So it's, man, I hate football today. And just injuries. I'm happy that we're in the bye week. Missing Desmond Trufant. You know, I mean, the defense only gave up 24 points. Like, I feel like I'm like, oh, the defense only gave up 24 points. But when you're talking about the Falcons defense and the way that I felt like the Eagles could just move the ball, the fact that we only gave up 24 and then that goal line stand, you know, towards the end to make them have to kick a field goal. Like, I mean, it was a good game. It was a good game, but I'm angry. I'm very, very angry. Just, it's just a stupid game. It's a stupid game played by stupid people in a stupid city. And,
football sucks, man.
Sorry. At least the Hawks beat the 76ers last night. Like, I don't even like basketball. I'm sitting here like, oh, at least the Hawks are good. What? They're just gonna lose in the playoffs, just like the Falcons. Like, I hate Atlanta. This town sucks. Like, even the guy that I'm supposed to be like competing with on like this recap right now lives here and he doesn't even cheer for this team. Like,
nah, not really. Here's the kicker. I'm from DC.
Yeah, this has been a bad week, man. It's been a real bad week. Not feeling it. My parents keep reminding me about the election results. The Falcons are bad. Matt Ryan throws another interception to seal a game.
You guys are six and four. You still have a strangle. I mean, what? You still have a 1-2-game lead in your division over the Saints?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Matt Bryant was kicking punts for us today. All right.
Yeah, that's because your punter got hurt on the fourth quarter.
He's the only person who could tackle people. Our punter probably led the team in tackles today.
Yeah,
like, anytime Matt Bosher is on – Matt Bosher is on the box score for tackles.
Oh my god!
Shouldn't happen.
Put him in on defense.
I mean, he probably played better than Ricardo Allen, who I can't wait until a rookie replaces him next year.
I will just point out that Matt Bosher did have one solo tackle here. Ricardo Allen had 5. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, how many plays was Matt Bosher in on? 3 or 4? Ricardo Allen was in on 70.
Well, I think now you know who to replace and how. Just put Matt Bosher in an Allen spot.
Like, ESPN is so disappointed in this game, they don't even credit anybody on Philadelphia with tackles. Like, I'm looking at the box score right now. They have no Philadelphia defense. Didn't matter. Falcons still can't win.
Oh, wow. Good boy. We have people who tackle. Nigel Bradham had some tackles. He had 4. Malcolm Jenkins led with 7. Jalen Mills had 6, but that's because Mills was mostly locked up on Julio Jones all day. But, you know, people came through. We had some people in the box score. But, again, like you said, because we dominated the ball for over 35 minutes, you know, our defense is not going to be on the field that much to even record tackles. And then the one touchdown you did have was really a quick strike. So it's not like you marched the ball down the field. What was that, a 4-play drive that took about a minute and a half?
No, I mean, I think it was 2 plays. I think we it was Teron Ward lost a yard, and then Matt Ryan was like, ah, to hell with it. I'll go to Taylor Gabriel. Let's just see what happens.
Right.
I mean, yeah, it was bad. Keanu Neal, I love Keanu Neal, though. Like,
he did make a good saving tackle on Brent Celek's screen, so yeah. that was good.
Man, and when he forced that fumble, like that ball bouncing back up into his hands, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Oh, so many takeaways for the Falcons too. Like, yeah, we did get the one fumble on Vic Beasley, who's quietly almost at 10 sacks right now. Like, who knew that Vic Beasley was almost 10 sacks? Like, this is stupid. And then Darren Sproles turned up field. That's a fumble. We got jobbed.
No, that was not a fumble. He never had control of the ball to even make a football move. He turned right into a defender and the ball popped out.
I'm sorry that our defenders are stronger than your receivers. It's not my fault. If it was Ryan Matthews, the Zebras would have been like, nah, he definitely fumbled.
Oh, wow. That's rich. You guys really didn't miss Trufant today. I will say that much because when Jordan Matthews, oh my God. Aside from the two or three that he missed and the penalty that should have been called that wasn't, that you guys will get fined on, he really did torch your secondary today. So you guys did miss Trufant.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
once again, we need to replace Nelson Aguilar because I can't stand him dropping everything under the sun.
Hey, I think he had fewer drops than Julio today. Julio with two egregious drops in the fourth quarter. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, well, as fun as this has been, I feel like we do need to bring this silliness to a close. So, you know, I don't know. I do hope that you start feeling better there, Tim.
I had an hour to get over this. I ate some popcorn. Didn't make me feel any better. I don't even know. Like, there's nothing. Oh. There's nothing.
Well, and for you, James, you are now, at least within the Next Fan Up podcast, you're moving up there for a big battle with the Scotsman in your division. That's going to be fun moving forward. So there's a lot for me, anyway, to take away and continue to be entertained by out of all of this. I hope it's been fun for you listeners as well. But yeah, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Nick.
We now move on to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and their 36-10 win over the Chicago Bears. Big win at home. Jameis Winston looked good. I'm here with our Jet superfan, Andrew, once again to break down this one. You were taking a look at this game, and I imagine that you are not the biggest Jay Cutler fan.
Well, he very well might be the Jets quarterback next year, so let's like not get ahead of ourselves right now. Bad Jay Cutler showed up today, like really bad Jay Cutler. Three turnovers, and I believe the first quarter, the interception return for touchdown by Chris Conte was one of the worst throws you'll ever see. He play action screen pass, he lofted it up, and Conte just jumped the route and took it back for six. He threw another interception on a slant route. I believe Vernon Hargraves jumped the route. And then Brent Grimes had – that was Grimes who jumped the route and got the interception, I believe. But, yeah, it was not a good time for Jay Cutler today. And the Chicago Bears offensive line didn't help matters either. The Bucs had four sacks. It felt like a lot more. One of them was a strip sack. And Noah Spence was in the backfield a lot of the day. And Kyle Long got hurt, which might not have helped matters, and he got carted off the field. So the only positive I would take from this game from Chicago, two positives actually. One is Jordan Howard. He had 100 yards on 15 carries. He did have a costly fumble that he lost, and he also might not play again this year, apparently. Who knows with the Chicago Bears, because they're one of the most secretive teams on injuries. But apparently he has a knee injury and an Achilles injury, so they don't know what's going on there. But he looked really impressive. And then the Bears pass rush. Yeah, Tampa Bay has got one of the worst offensive lines in terms of pass protection. But Leonard Floyd and Pernell McPhee and Willie Young, those are one of the best trios of pass rushers in all of football. And they showed up today in a big way. But Jameis Winston showed up even more. He was moving like Tom Brady in the pocket today, even better than Tom Brady in a certain aspect, because you don't see Tom Brady make four guys miss and like do a kind of a Madden thing where he runs 10 yards behind the line of scrimmage in the pocket, 20 yards, and makes a couple guys miss and lost it downfield to Mike Evans. Like, Jameis made a couple of crazy plays today. And it wasn't even like Mike Evans did much. He only had the four catches, I believe, for like 60 yards. But they, the Buccaneers, it took them a while to get things going. But once they got things going, the game was over. Doug Martin didn't run well, but it was good to see him healthy. He punched in a 1 yard touchdown, and the turnovers are the story of the game. That's it. I mean, the Bears had four, and maybe even five, and I think Tampa only had one. I think Jameis threw one interception. So that's the story. I already mentioned the Buccaneers defense and the pass rush. So yeah, that's kind of it. And Chicago is going to be one of the worst teams in the league, and Tampa Bay is still in it as they can be. I believe they are what now 4-5, but they're not going to be a playoff team. But there are some promising things there. I think there are some promising things on both teams, but they're going to have to wait till next year.
Yeah, I mean, that's what really confuses me about the Bears is I feel like they have a lot of guys stepping up, and a lot of them are young guys. I mean, also, I feel like their offseason, like all of their major offseason moves have paid off, it seems like, in terms of Gerald Freeman looks good, Leonard Floyd looks good. There's a lot on that defense that looks good, and yet they're still just god-awful at 2-7. Is it just the quarterback that needs to change for them? Like, what's their next step?
Quarterback and left tackle for sure. I know our super fan Tom, Bears super fan, is a bigger Charles Leno fan than I am, but they definitely need a left tackle. The interior defensive line is one of the best in football when healthy. They just haven't been healthy this year. Josh Sitton, Cody Whitehair, and Kyle Long, those are three of the bigger name interior linemen in the league. Maybe not as much Whitehair, but he was a second round pick out of Kansas State, and he's played pretty well. The receivers, Kevin White has been hurt all year, hasn't played, so that's kind of a question mark. But Cameron Meredith, that's one thing I forgot to mention. So the Bears had 10 points, but the only touchdown they got was on the last play of the first half, where Jay Cutler lost it from midfield in a Hail Mary, and it tipped right into Cameron Meredith's hands in the back of the end zone. So they really had no offense today. That was the extent of it, and Jordan Howard running the ball, but that was it. They're going to need to find a left tackle. They're going to need to find secondary players. And Eddie Goldman is a stud at nose tackle. But so, yeah, they have a lot of pieces that I like. And it wouldn't surprise me with the way the NFC North is looking right now that next year they really make a run. And as for Tampa Bay, it's a very similar situation. They need a lot of help on the offensive line, a lot more than Chicago needs. Like, they need it everywhere, maybe except for right guard with Ali Marpet. They could probably give Jameis another weapon, because it seems like it's Mike Evans and a bunch of nobodies out there. But Jameis is making it work somewhat, and it's just it's all going to depend on the quarterback. And the Bears are going to have a high enough draft pick to take one, and Tampa already has one, so we'll see what happens. But again, it's one of those wait till next year things with both these teams.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Thank you, Nick. We'll see.
We now go on to my hated division rivals, the Denver Broncos, in their 25-23 win over the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. And I'm here with both of our super fans, but Chris, our New Orleans super fan, on the losing side of this, it sounds like it was a strange game, but one in which there was a particular play that stands out in the Hall of Fame of bad officiating for you this season.
There was one in particular. No, I mean, here's what it comes down to. The play itself, there's a penalty on the block that's not called. The number 93 holds the head down of the center, allowing Simmons to jump over and block the extra point. I can even look past that. Calls are missed all the time. I get it. But when you have a player who's clearly out of bounds, there's a replay system for a reason. They should have been able to see this. I understand the white shoes, white paint. That also means that you should have green in between the two. So, I mean, we've looked at the photos. It's clear. But this is another game this season. Now, the Saints could have still lost this game on their own. They turned the ball over four times. They did a pretty good job of screwing this up. But week in and week out, we're seeing games that are being decided by the refs, not the play on the field. And it is becoming disgusting at this point.
So put this blocked field goal in context for us. Like, where was the game and what was at stake in that one?
Well, you have the Saints just had a huge play to Brandon Cooks with, I believe, a minute 23 left to tie the game at, what was it, 21, I believe. They go for the – or no, this would have – yeah, they tied the game. I'm sorry. The block
yeah, tied at
extra point gives them a two-point win because it was returned for a touchdown.
Okay, wow. Yep, that sounds pretty key. Well, and so to toss it over to you, Lewis, you guys come away from this one 7-3, although second, ha, in the division currently. And so how do you feel like your team played? This is a game that I think a lot of people were predicting to be a bit of a trap game for Denver.
I mean, I think the Saints were favored in this game regardless, but I mean, it was a tale of two halves. I think we came out really, really strong in the first half. We had a 10-0 lead driving in a two-minute drill, and then Trevor threw his first pick of the game, which really, really changed not the outcome because they still won, but really changed the psyche of the game. So instead of making it 13-0, it was 10-3. And the Saints played a much better second half, but I want to say something about that missed call. I unfortunately wasn't even looking at if, I think it's the 93, so that's Jared Crick, if he pulled down the center for Justin Simmons to get a free release. So I can't really comment on that. But for the call of Justin Simmons stepping on the line, from what I've seen, I think he was out. I think he was out of bounds, but there wasn't really a shot where I could definitively say that he was out of bounds. So I guess the refs are doing what they're supposed to be doing by making the call on the field stands. If I had the camera view from his left side, where we could have saw the end of the cleat touch the end of the line, then I think they would have had an easier time making the call, but I don't think they had that shot, so they had to keep the one that was on the field.
And what do you think about Denver's game plan in this one? I mean, obviously this was a close game, but one in which Denver had the lead for at least the first half, most of it. And they had Trevor Siemian throw it 40 times. Obviously, the run game wasn't working quite as well as you guys had hoped, but how do you feel about the way that the Denver game planned this and came out?
I mean, I think it was the best way to attack the Saints' defense. I mean, our offensive line hasn't been creating holes all season, really, and the running game hasn't been so effective. So if you put Demaryius and you put Emmanuel one-on-one against these Saints' corners, I mean, it's a way to get to be effective. And it really worked towards the first half. I thought we played an excellent half of football. Like, it was very disappointing only being up 10-3. And for that type of game, they needed Trevor to throw it a bunch of times, especially because the Saints kept the momentum going towards the second half. And but turnovers killed us. I mean, both of Trevor's picks were really, really bad picks, and they were in a scoring situation. So I think the bye comes at a perfect time. I mean, we didn't have Derek Wolf, we didn't have Tlaib, and we need to get healthy and fix that offensive line and running game problem.
And how do you feel about your defense, Chris? You guys ended up with 11 QB hits, and, coming up in the stat sheet all over the place, 6 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, 6 passes defensed. Obviously, the other team was able to move the ball on you, but do you see improvement on that side?
Well, absolutely. This is the best game our defense has played all season. Rankins is finally starting to come in his own, get some time on the field. He's a huge bright spot. Fairly, I've been pushing him all year. Yeah, he got another sack today. The Saints have three legitimate, really good defensive linemen, and then Paul Kruger, who at this point is rotational at best, starting for us. Delvin Bro, this is for his first game back as well from breaking his leg in the first week. Very rusty. A lot of Demaryius Thomas' catches. Bro has never given up those catches. So it's looking up, but, you know, we do have a four-game suspension looming with Kenny Vaccaro that I'm expecting to be announced here soon. You got a Thursday game against Carolina. Who knows? I mean, this is one of those games that I can see the Saints falling and falling quickly, but we might get lucky. We might have the refs on our side this next week, so maybe we'll get the benefit of one of these calls like we did in the Seattle game.
Hey, you know, there's that. I mean, if when justice is blind, it does tend to break in your favor at times.
One of these days, we'll see what happens.
We will see. Well, thanks a lot, guys. Enjoy your bye, Lewis, and better luck next week for you, Chris.
Better, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Next up, if you happen to miss the Los Angeles Rams versus the New York Jets, you were one of the lucky ones. But nonetheless, to break it down here, we have Andrew, our Jets superfan, as usual, from the back of a cab. And so, Andrew, tell us about this just absolutely fascinating 9-6 loss.
Well, you could say it was a loss, but I look at it as a win. just because Bryce Petty played quarterback and the Jets didn't win, so I got what I wanted. But as for the game itself, it was kind of what you would expect. You would expect a game of field goals, and even though the Jets didn't actually kick a field goal, they actually scored a touchdown. Well, this is my biggest pet peeve. If you saw the Jets touchdown, it was one of the most beautifully designed red zone plays you would ever see. Basically, Bryce Petty threw a quick screen out to Brandon Marshall, and Brandon Marshall was wide out to the left, and none won the slot. And Marshall then lateraled the ball to Bilal Powell, who sort of ran like a drag route from the backfield toward Marshall as he caught the ball. Marshall flipped the ball to Powell, and he nunwa blocked two guys to allow Powell to go untouched into the end zone. And all I'm thinking is, the Jets are having any trouble in the red zone all year, and this is when they decide to drop this play, when they are 3-6 against a Los Angeles Rams team in Week 10, where both teams are going nowhere. So, yeah, maybe that's just me being annoyed and being a typical pessimistic Jets fan, but that kind of pissed me off. But as for the game in general, Bryce Petty's the obvious storyline. He didn't look too bad, and he didn't look too good either. He didn't really get a chance to throw the ball down the field much. I'm not sure if that was a product of play calling or of Petty just being scared. You don't have to really look at the coach's film for that. But he had one really nice go route to Robbie Anderson, and he had another one that he – it looked like he overthrew Anderson, but you could also make the case Anderson – didn't play the ball well in the air. It was kind of on both of them, but the story of the game was that both these teams suck. I mean, that's it. the Rams couldn't get anything going with Gurley on the ground in the first half. They were torching Darrell Reeves with Kenny Britt, who had 98 yards in the first half. But then Britt couldn't do anything in the second half. But then Gurley started running the ball well in the second half, and a 78-yard punt. That's right, 78-yard punt by Johnny Hecker sort of flipped the game. The game was tied 6-6 at the time because Nick Folk missed the extra point. And the 78-yard punt flipped field position. And after the Jets punted, of course, on the ensuing possession, the Rams kicked the go-ahead field goal. And then Bryce Petty threw an interception on the final drive as they were trying to lead the team down the field. But as a Jets fan, I mean, I'm happy that they got Petty in the game. I'm happy they're going to have a bye week to try and install new things, try to see what he actually has, what skills he can show in order to make a case for him to actually maybe compete for the job next year. But at least I don't have to watch Fitzpatrick anymore, and at least the Jets aren't 4-6 instead of 3-7, because at the end of the day, that's not going to make a difference. I just want the highest draft pick possible. And, yeah, the Rams suck. There's nothing for me to say. The defensive line, which is supposed to be the strength of the Rams team, didn't even dominate a decimated Jets offensive line. Yeah, the Rams D-line probably won the battle, but Matt Forte ran for almost 100 yards. It seemed like Petty had a lot of time to throw. The Rams only had one sack all day. You didn't really hear Aaron Donald being called a lot. Robert Quinn came close to a strip sack, but he didn't get it. So, like, the Rams aren't impressive, and if this and Case Keenum was definitely not impressive in this game, and this game does nothing to quell the concerns of Rams fans, because if Keenum is still playing, something's got to be wrong with Jared Goff, because if he can't beat this guy out, then I don't know what to tell you.
Plus, that was going to be my next question is, like, you know, how bad does Goff have to be for them to not be testing him out, getting him in these games? It's not like the Rams are going anywhere this year, although maybe they are, you know, at NFC West. I mean, they're still 4-5.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it in the preseason. Goff didn't have control of the offense. It seemed like he didn't really have the verbiage down. You also look at him. First off, just to get this out there, I wasn't a Jared Goff fan. Carson Wentz was my number one quarterback in the draft this year. Nothing that Jared Goff really impressed me. I guess I was in the minority in that. And obviously, I could still be wrong. But that's just full disclosure, just because I don't know. He's not playing. And people were saying the same thing about Bryce Petty. I mean, if he couldn't beat out Fitzpatrick, how bad must he be? And, I mean, we saw today. I mean, I don't think he was completely awful, but we saw why maybe Todd Bowles was hesitant to play him. And maybe that's the same reason Jeff Fisher doesn't want to play Jared Goff.
Yeah, could be. Anybody else stand out here? I mean, I know that you've been sort of on the record saying that probably some of your more aged veterans are going to end up, playing the last few games as Jets this year. Anybody young stand out? Anybody old punch their ticket even sooner?
Well, if you're asking me who played well, I like Robbie Anderson. I thought played decent. On the offensive line, I thought James Carpenter had a decent game. Again, it's very hard to really quantify offensive line play, especially not when you're watching coaches' film. On the defensive side of the ball, it looked like Lorenzo Maldon was causing the havoc in the backfield. But the guy who punched his ticket out, it's got to be Revis at this point. I did the math this weekend on all the salary cap space the Jets are going to create this offseason. They're gonna cut Revis. They're gonna cut Clady. They're gonna cut Nick Folk. He probably punched his ticket out of New York after missing that extra point again today. He's got a $3 million cap hit this offseason. There's no way the Jets are gonna be able to justify keeping a kicker over $3 million when there's so many other holes on their roster. Brandon Giacomini, I don't think he's gonna be back. There's just a lot of people. I don't think Sheldon Richardson's gonna be back. That's another conversation. I think he's going to be traded. And then if you saw his quote after this game, that was that was one of the quotes of the year. I don't know if I could say it on the podcast, but it was quite something. You could go look that up. But yeah, it's the same old stuff for the Jets right now, and they're just going to play out the season. Hopefully, they don't win too many games, and they get a top 10 draft pick where they could take a quarterback, or even one of those top running backs are going to be out this year. Or one of those pass rushers, whether it be Myles Garrett or Jonathan Allen. The top of this draft is extremely loaded, and it would just kill me if the Jets got like the 16th pick in the draft. So it's good to see that they're giving Bryce Petty a shot and not having Ryan Fitzpatrick lead them to a 7-9 record.
Yeah, well, and congratulations for that.
Oh man, dude, you're probably so happy. Like the Chiefs are 7-2. Jets are 3-7. After everything this offseason, you're probably on cloud 9 right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, Chiefs are 7-2 without even having looked good for the last couple of weeks, maybe the last few. But
yeah,
hey.
and that's why my stance has not changed on them. They will make the playoffs. I don't think they will do anything once they're there. Maybe they'll win a wild card game, but I don't. I mean, who knows? Justin Houston's going to come back. He makes that defense very scary, especially with the way Dee Ford is playing. The Alex Smith thing scares me. I honestly think they might be better with Nick Foles at quarterback, which is a different conversation. I'd actually like to hear your take on that, but this isn't the time or the place.
Yeah, the Jets-Rams recap is not really the place for that discussion, but We'll have plenty of time to talk about that soon. And I have a so we'll move on from this one, but I have a feeling we'll be hearing from you once again a little bit later in this this recap.
Yeah, man, looking forward.
We now move to the Washington Redskins and their 26-20 win over the Minnesota Vikings. I'm here with Neil, our Redskins superfan. And Neil, you and I were talking a lot about this game last week. We were in the battle together. You know, the things we were talking about was that, you know, you're going to have to get the running game going against that really stout front seven of the Vikings. And you're going to have a decent day passing against what's actually a very good secondary. Seems like at least one of those two things happened, but what did you think, you know, came together for the win here?
Oh, I'm very happy, Nick, that both of those things happened. Robert Kelly got his second start in the backfield, replacing Matt Jones, who really was a healthy scratch today. I think primarily because he just fumbled too much, and that was just it was starting to get us down really as an organization. So Kelly came in 2 weeks ago against Cincinnati, played okay, played really well tonight, played really well in the second half, especially when he got a few really solid 10 to 15 yard runs. Good average, just under 100 yards, almost a 4.5 yard average. Terrific stuff. Very pleased with Kelly. He certainly kept a balance there in the offense. And Kirk Cousins, hey, 66% of his passes completed, a couple of touchdowns, no turnovers, and had a really good game in terms of finding our new double tight end combination there in Reed and Vernon Davis. Really happy all round offensively. Except for one thing, Nick. One thing is it keeps happening to Washington, and that's the red zone struggles. You would think with two outstanding tight ends we'd be okay in the red zone, but nope. Again, tonight we took the ball into the red zone on three plays in the second half, three drives, sorry, in the second half, and we ended up with three field goals. And, you know, when you're playing a poor offense like the Vikings, you can kind of get away with that sometimes. But when we start playing against top offenses, then we're going to need to turn those 3 points into 7 points a little bit more often.
Well, and I applaud your modesty for not jumping out with this to start things out. But, you know, when we were talking about X Factors last week, you named Preston Smith. And lo and behold, he came up with one big play that really helped you guys out in this one.
He certainly did. He's been a fairly safe bet to mention because he's a player we have on defense who is really, really exciting. He led the league in sacks as a rookie, in rookie sacks last year, or rookies that had sacks, I don't know what that's called. Anyway, he led the league there last year, and he came in, he thought, oh yeah, this is going to be a superstar in the making. And this season he's been so close in so many games to making great plays. But tonight we saw an interception in the third quarter, which was reminiscent of many of these one-handed catches that these great wide receivers seem to make week on week these days. He made a great athletic play, and then he closed the game off with his second sack of the game. So a couple of sacks, crucial interception. I'm really happy for the guy because he's been so close week on week, and yeah, terrific. And of course, well done me.
And Minnesota's rushing attack, this is something that we've been talking about for weeks now as being a real major problem for them. They ended up with 21 carries for 47 yards. That's a 2.2 per carry average. Was that just Washington really stepping up and being dominating in that respect, or do you think that's a problem that lies more on the Minnesota side of the ball?
Oh, well, Nick, let's be honest. The words dominating and Washington's run attack are very seldom used in the same sentence. I would say here that they've got a very poor running game. Simple as that. And I don't think it was much to do with Washington. I just think they're very poor. And they got 44-odd yards, whatever it was you said. That's probably 150 yards for most NFL offenses running the ball at Washington. So, yeah, I'd put that down more to Minnesota just having, you know, really, they're trying to run that little guy up the middle, and that can work every four or five plays. He can get a decent run, but he's going to get crushed, and eventually he's going to get banged up and out of the game. I certainly slow him down, and that was the case tonight. He looks a decent player, but not running between the tackles and not behind that offensive line.
And what do you take away if you're a Minnesota fan here? Obviously, I mean, Sam Bradford actually looks pretty good. They kept him cleaner than they had in the past, just three sacks. But despite the fact they're able to get the ball moving through the air, they just they couldn't come together with a win here. Do you think they've righted the ship with some of their problems, or do you think this is something that they're really going to continue to struggle for the rest of the season?
Yeah, no, I think they'll continue to struggle. I was impressed by the Vikings. They went 14-0 down in this game, and they came back with a good defensive stop, and then two very good drives for touchdowns. In fact, three touchdowns in a row to take the lead at halftime. I was impressed by their guts and the way they came back. I think they were on a three-game losing streak before today, and to go 14-0 down away from home, and to come back to 20 points to 14 at halftime, that showed some guts and some courage in that team. So I would take that forward. I think Diggs, is it Stephon Diggs, the wide receiver, the slot wide receiver, he had a superb game, albeit against a rookie slot corner for us, who we've got a lot of hope for in Kendall Fuller, but he certainly was taken to school today. So Diggs is a real positive for them going forward. He's a good player. Not a great game-breaking player, but he's going to catch a lot of passes and get his yards. Rudolph's good. Defensively, they lost Kendricks again early on in this game, and he's a big miss for them. And watching Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis, albeit they're really good players, they were open a lot. Crowder as well across the middle. So they're good at the cornerbacks positions, but I struggle seeing them doing very much there when the ball's getting thrown across the middle. Cousins was doing a lot of play action and then just dumping the ball off across the middle and getting good yardage to the tight ends and to Crowder. So, yeah, struggles for the Vikings going forward. The offensive line is poor, Nick. We all know that. Very, very poor. They picked up, again, more injuries there tonight. And Washington doesn't have the greatest pass rush in the world, but we still got fairly steady pressure on Bradford all night. That division doesn't look so great. That division looks open to Detroit now if they really want it.
Well, that's what I was about to say, is that the good news for Minnesota is, despite this loss, I mean, they're still effectively in it with a virtual tie with Detroit at the top. As we sit here on Sunday afternoon, it's Detroit 5-4, Minnesota 5-4, Green Bay 4-4, Chicago 2-6. Meanwhile, for Washington, granted, the Dallas is a couple of games ahead of everybody, but it's now very much a race between the other three teams in that division, and Washington certainly has a shot to take a wild card out of that, or possibly catch up to Dallas. How are you feeling about that?
Yeah, Dallas are a little bit ahead of us, of course. I do think the division is still wide open. I do think at some point Prescott and Elliott, or one of them certainly, will have a real dip in form, hit that so-called rookie wall. I think there's a reality in that. Certainly, I certainly hope so. I reckon they could still come back to the pack. They're not the greatest team in terms of depth, Dallas, and a few injuries will soon see them dropping the odd game here and there. I think it's still tight. I think it's still anybody's division. Dallas obviously are the favourites for it. But Washington, I think Philadelphia won today, didn't they? They beat Atlanta. So the Giants will also be in the mix. So yeah, I think still a lot to play for in the NFC East.
All right, good stuff. Well, thanks a lot, Neil. We'll be talking soon.
Cheers, Nick.
Cheers. We now move to the Houston Texans and the Jacksonville Jaguars in their game. The Texans came away with this one, winning 24-21 in Jacksonville. And I'm joined here with our just absolutely elated and inspired Jaguars superfan, Ryan. And so, Ryan, the Jaguars fall to 2-7 here. It looks like we saw the continued double-edged sword of the Jaguars. We saw some promise, and we saw why they are 2-7 in this game.
Yeah, I'm just exuding jubilation here in sunny Las Vegas, Nevada. Another week watching the Jaguars in my house. We've got two big screens, and for some reason I keep putting the Jaguars on one of them. And here we go again. Bortles actually played one of his better games, and I say that with him having two interceptions and also missing some deep throws. So that just tells you how the season's going. Let's analyze this game as if it mattered, as I like to do. Start these recaps with there was a Jaguars score. I think this is how it went. And I think it was 21-13, I believe. And then anyway, the kickoff, it was an excellent kickoff. That's not sarcasm, by the Jags. It bounced at like the 3-yard line. And Texans guy picked it up, fumbled with it, and we had him start at the 8. Two plays in a row. I'm mixing up a couple things. It was 21-13. I don't remember if this kickoff thing happened, but the key play of the entire game was it was 3rd and 16 for the Texans in their own territory. I think this is before their field goal, so 21-13. 3rd and 16, the Texans run a draw play on a give up, and they happen to convert that. And it's the longest I saw today, the longest third down conversion, believe it or not, the Jaguars have given up was a 3rd and 16. And the Texans go and convert that into a field goal, which makes it 24-13. Jaguars end up doing a late touchdown to make it 24-21, but then again on a third down, the defense fails. And Texans are able to run the clock out, and game over. 2-7, Texans lead the division, and no, the Texans didn't even look that good.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, it seemed like the Jaguars, I mean, while they really didn't seem to have much of an answer for Houston on the ground, granted, I know that some of those runners got their averages bumped up by a few big runs, but I mean, Brock Osweiler finished the day 14 of 27 for 99 yards. 2 touchdowns, but still less than 100 yards passing by the Texans. I mean, is that something that like makes you feel like it's even more of an uber fail on the behalf of the Jaguars to lose that kind of a game, or is that something you guys are building on?
You can call Gus Bradley's tenure an uber fail, basically. I've had questions about him as a coach a couple years in, and now just looking at everything, it's all an uber fail. But yeah, I didn't even know that stat. I knew Osweiler looked bad, but 99 yards, wow, that just sucks. And yeah, you know, so like I said, the Texans didn't even look that good. I still think they're going to win the division. I don't know how. Marquise Lee, his career was just nowhere, and he had injuries and everything, and Allen Robinson, who did have a good game, it should be like a top 10 receiver in the NFL, and he hasn't been. And Allen Burns is so consistent, but this year, I don't know, not as good. But Marquise Lee really stepped up his game. He looks good, and he's like the one positive thing going right now. Besides a defense that played well, but I just want to give Marquise Lee a shout-out. The Albino Tiger. And if anyone wants to know why he's called that, just Google it.
All right, that sounds frightening. And it looks like, I mean, you still do have these players that are jumping up for you. Jalen Ramsey continues to look good. And Malik Jackson had a pretty good game. I don't know, I mean, do you
he
think
did.
You have a lot of these high-priced guys on defense. Do you think they're earning their keep there?
No, definitely not. but I don't know if I blame them or the coaching staff or everybody. It's just no one's earning their keep when you're 2-7. It is a little unfair to blame the defense when Bortles is playing as bad as he is this year. But it just, unless they rattle off 7 in a row and win the division at 9-7, unfortunately, it's just another year of looking at next year. And it, Malik Jackson did play well. Jalen Ramsey He was kind of up and down in this game, but he's still going to be awesome. I'm a little surprised Miles Jack hasn't made more of an impact yet. But overall, no, nobody's really earning their keep. Malik Jackson was going to be overpaid no matter what he did, but he finally had a good game. Yeah, we'll see what they can do. They got to play a winning Lions team next week, which is interesting. So unless they get 7 wins in a row, we're pretty much looking at the draft already.
Well, it is a Lions team that makes plenty of mistakes, so you know maybe they'll make more than the Jaguars.
Hey, you know what? That is off the visit. That's the other thing. I did think before the game started today, unlike last week against your Chiefs, that the Jags would have a chance to win. So that did make it a little extra disappointing because the way the game played out, they possibly could have won. So maybe the Lions is a winnable game too. That doesn't seem like they're completely doomed. So tune in next week. People will see if the Jaguars are not completely doomed.
All right, that sounds like a pretty great plug. Well, thanks a lot, Ryan. Feel better, and talk to you next week.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
We now move to the Miami Dolphins and their 31-24 road win over the San Diego Chargers. I'm here with our Dolphins superfan, Andy. Andy, this was kind of for you. You seem to be surprised by this win. Talking to you off the air, I mean, this was a good showing by your team.
Yeah, this is the most impressive game of the Gase era thus far. Probably the most impressive game given the circumstances and given the context the Dolphins have played in maybe 2 or 3 years. You know, I picked us to lose. I picked us to lose 27-24. I mean, I knew the Chargers weren't going to blow us out. I knew it'd be close. I guess what's most surprising to me is the nature by which we won. I mean, Phil Rivers throwing 3 interceptions in the span of 10 minutes. I mean, that's just unbelievable. Not only is it unbelievable, but throwing interceptions against a secondary that really he'd been carving up all afternoon. You know, you look at some of you go up and down the Chargers box score. Williams, 5 catches, 125. Gates, 4 for 63. Melvin Gordon out of the backfield, 5 for 62. Inman, 5 for 43. I mean, Rivers was just picking. He was just picking his spots out there. And you know, going forward, if there's one thing that's going to hold this Dolphin team back, for once, it's not Tannehill. It's not the rushing defense. You know, we bottled up Melvin Gordon pretty good today. If there's one thing that's going to hold the team back, it is definitely their secondary against better quarterbacks. And today, I'm not sure they really allayed my concerns because they did get torched up and down the field, but they just happened to just pick balls off. I mean, Rivers had 4 interceptions. So, really, really, really impressive win. A consummate team win. Offense and defense both played well enough. Cameron Wake continues to defy Father Time. He had 2.5 sacks today. If you count the sacks that were wiped away by ridiculous defensive holding calls, he would have 4.5 sacks. I mean, he just had an unbelievable, unbelievable day. But yeah, I mean, crazy, crazy win. And the Dolphins are squarely in the playoff hunt. No other way to put it.
And, you know, some of these guys that we've been talking about in weeks past, young guys that are starting to show up. Devontae Parker, he has arrived, it would appear.
It would appear, but watch him catch 3 balls for 19 yards next week. I mean, here's the thing. And on Dolphin Twitter, a lot of people are calling Devontae Parker a bust, and that's not fair for a couple reasons. Number one, you know, we're only 25 games into his NFL career, and there's a lot of time for him to turn things around. And number two, does he even really need to turn things around? I mean, he caught 5 balls for 103 yards today. This is his, I believe, 3rd game this year. The Dolphins have played 9 games, and this is the 3rd game where he's gone over 100 yards. So it's not like his production is completely non-existent. And I'm going to echo the same exact thing I told you after we lost Tennessee. In that podcast, which is there's no doubt in my mind that Devontae Parker is a legitimate number one downfield receiver when healthy. Problem is, he's never fully healthy, including this game. His hamstrings are made of peanut butter. He has foot problems, too. He's never fully healthy, but, you know, he's
You know, there's different types of busts. I think as football fans, we get, when talking about players drafted in the first round, we're way too binary about it. It's like, oh, he's either a cornerstone player or a bust. Cornerstone player, bust. Cornerstone player, bust. It's not all that black and white. It's not all that binary. And do I think Devontae Parker is going to be an eight-time Pro Bowler like A.J. Green? No. But is he going to be a bust? He's not going to be a bust either. He's probably going to be like a Michael Crabtree type. Crabtree, given where he was drafted, ninth overall, has probably been a little bit of a disappointment in his career, but he's still a very, very good NFL receiver. He's a top, he's Michael Crabtree, depending on who you ask, is probably the 18th to 25th best receiver in the NFL, something like that. And I think that's what Devontae Parker is going to be. But yeah, I mean, between Parker, first round pick 2015, Jay Ajayi, steal in the fifth round 2015, Landry, we obviously know who he is at this point. You know, the Dolphins have a lot of very, very promising young players. I just wish that more of them played in the secondary because it's just such a glaring weakness for us.
Well, it sounds like you know what you need to fix next year, and this, you know, this could finally be a team that's on the rise in the way that we've been expecting it for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, definitely, you know, I've been tricked a number of times in recent years into thinking that this team was on the rise, because it's not like, you know, as bad as the post-Marino years have been, as bad as the past 17 years have been for the Dolphins, it's not like they haven't had success. It's not like, you know, we were 2 years ago at this time, we were 5-3 and in control of our own destiny. At the end of the 2013 season, after beating the Patriots at home in the biggest win of probably the Philbin era, to be honest, we were 8-6 in complete control of our own destiny, with the only thing preventing us from making the playoffs were two sub-500 divisional teams. What did we lose? Or what did we do? We went up to Buffalo that year, week 16, lost to a 5-10 Bills team. And then week 17, we let Geno Smith come down to Miami, throw for 98 yards, and still beat us. So, you know, it's not like the Dolphins haven't had success. It's not like they haven't been promising in recent years. They have. But I just hope that it's for real this time. I just hope that it's sustainable. You know, Adam Gase is a very good head coach. I think I'm ready to make that statement. I'm just not sure he has the right quarterback, as well as Tannehill played today. And again, this, I said this off air, probably Tannehill's best game as a pro. I mean, in terms of raw passer rating, it's his third highest game ever. But in terms of how he played and the eye test, he also had a nice 20-yard scramble. You know, this is probably Tannehill's best game as a pro. I still think that we need to bring in competition for him. And, you know, the roster still is very thin in some key parts. But Adam Gase, you know, to run completely counter to what I said after the Titans win, when I said I want to be opposed to firing Adam Gase. He's done nothing to prove that he's a good NFL head coach. That was a long time ago. That was 5 games ago, and at this point he has proven that he belongs, for sure.
Good stuff. Well, congrats on the win, and I'll be talking to you next week.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Cheers. We now go to the Dallas Cowboys and their stunning 35-30 win over the Pittsburgh Steelers. This one really came down to a very crazy fourth quarter, and I'm here with our Cowboys superfan, Kevin, to break it down for me. Man, what happened in this one?
I don't even know. I'm still trying to just even comprehend what just happened those last 45 seconds to a minute in that game. That was one of the craziest endings. I'm not even going to talk about the Cowboys game right now. That ending reminded me of the Ravens-Vikings game in 2013 or 14 in the snow with all those last-minute touchdowns. Oh, that was the craziest ending since that game. I can't even really grasp that we won that game right now. So I'm just gonna try to take a few deep breaths now and control myself and answer the question you just asked me. But what do I make of that game? So I think this game was a statement game for Dallas, and that's odd to say considering they were coming into this game 7-1. But winning this game in Pittsburgh, where Roethlisberger and the Steelers are known to play well and put up serious numbers, and they did put up serious numbers today. I knew coming into the game that we were going to have to put up over 30 points to keep up with the Steelers in this game. If you listen to the preview show, I have had concerns about the Dallas defense, and those things sort of did come to light today. Although after the first series or two, I think the Cowboys did a phenomenal job containing Le'Veon Bell. We were all over the field. Our defense made a lot of group tackles, gang tackles. They were just swarming the ball. So I came away really impressed with that game. I expected Le'Veon Bell to have a way bigger game on the ground. Now, he did score 2 touchdowns, and he was a huge factor in the passing game. But I think we did a relatively good job at containing him. Only averaged 3.4 yards a carry. So I think the Cowboys deserve credit in that front. But back to Dak Prescott, which is really the whole story of this game. I wasn't sure if he could do what he did today, and that is come down from a 2-score deficit early in the game in a hostile environment. He showed the poise that he showed all season, so I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. But as a Tony Romo supporter, this is just the nail in the coffin. Tony's not playing this year. After a win like that, even if you thought that Romo was better than Dak, it would be suicide to put Romo back in. Dak is the quarterback the rest of the year. This win officially cements it, in my opinion. The Cowboys, they're looking good. The defense did give me a little concern, as I said. They obviously can be had. The lack of pressure, we forced on Roethlisberger. We only dropped him one time, but he is a hard man to bring down. He completed a large number of his passes, he almost averaged 9 yards in attempts, which is pretty high. So the Cowboys pass defense is something to be concerned about even after the hot start. So I'm really looking forward to getting Morris Claiborne and Barry Church back towards the end of the season, which will come right around playoff time, which will be great. It'll give them a few weeks to gel. Right now, as a Cowboys fan, I'm not going out on a limb here. We're probably going to get a first-round bye here. So this game has me feeling all sorts of feelings that I haven't felt in a long time about a Cowboys team, perhaps ever. So I could probably rant a while, so you have to give me some direction probably before I get out of control.
I'm just interested. I mean, I sort of agree with you. I mean, it would be the mother of all collapses if somehow this, like, falls apart for you guys. So it's really just a question of how deep you guys can go this year and what are sort of the things you continue to be worried about as a potential Achilles heel for this team.
As I was mentioning, the defense is a work in progress. And I hate to say it, the defense is not really going to get much better as the season goes on. We pretty much maxed in the potential on the defensive side of the ball. So we know what the Cowboys are right now, nine games into the season. That's what our defense is. If they're on the field for too long, like they were on today, we didn't do as well on the time of possession side as we have seen earlier this year. And the Cowboys sort of got hit with some big plays. So that is a little worrisome against really good quarterbacks. I know the Cowboys can be had. In the beginning of the game, they were just destroying us all in the middle of the field, short passes. Eli Rogers had a pretty big first quarter. He sort of disappeared after that, but I think they could have continued to feed him. If Ladarius Green was healthy and knew more of the playbook, I feel he could have had a big game. I didn't really like what I saw from the Cowboys defense in this game, but aside from a few clutch plays, I will give them that. But the defense is worried. The offense is going to take us to the promised land here. The defense is obviously feeds off the offense there. So I think everyone knows that. So that's really what's going to stop us. If we get into the playoffs and Ezekiel Elliott, if we go against the Seahawks, and they stop Zeke on the ground, it's going to be a problem for us. Jimmy Graham, Cowboys aren't good against tight end or the slot man, so Jimmy Graham, Doug Baldwin, I'm just hypothetically speaking if you're like 2 months in advance. But that's really one of the only concerns I see here is if our defense is forced to be on the field for a long period of time, that's when we will lose. And other than that, the Cowboys, you can't really say anything negative about them after that win. You would be hard pressed to find one negative thing to say about them.
Good stuff. Well, congrats again on the win, and I'll be talking to you next week.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.
This is Justin, the Seahawks superfan, here to talk about the Tennessee Titans versus the Green Bay Packers. A game much to the surprise of a lot of people, the Titans blew out the Packers. Marcus Mariota threw for 4 touchdowns, the final score 47-25. For me, I look at this game and a few things absolutely stand out to me. Marcus Mariota was great. Those 4 touchdowns are career high. Aaron Rodgers wasn't bad. He completed about 3/4 of his passes for 371 yards, 2 touchdowns. But there's no running game whatsoever in Green Bay. Absolutely none. It's just James Starks right now. Even before that, though, Eddie Lacy was not looking great. On the other side of the ball, DeMarco Murray does everything. He's catching the ball well. He's running the ball really well. He's throwing the ball well. He had a throwing touchdown. He's doing everything. Delanie Walker continues to be an outstanding option for them, catching the football. I mean, look out. Tennessee Titans are 5-5. That's as many victories as they've had over the last 2 years combined. So things seem to be trending in the right direction. For the Packers, I don't know. I'm kind of done with them. All year long, I've been sort of an apologist for them. I think my preseason expectations, you know, if you told me at the start of the year that the Packers were going to be in the Super Bowl, I would believe you. I look at them now, and I don't see them in the playoffs the way that they're playing. I mean, they're under 500 this late in the season, which is absolutely crazy. So for this one, they're still looking for answers. I don't know where you point your finger at in this one. I mean, they gave up 47 points to the Tennessee Titans. My goodness. And, you know, that 25 is not going to get it done the way this team is constructed. So the Tennessee Titans continue to surprise and are right on the fringe of starting to be a potential wildcard team. The Green Bay Packers, man, I don't see it unless they turn things around completely. I think they're just about done. And then I really have to start to wonder if that coaching staff is going to feel the heat.
We now move on to the Arizona Cardinals and their 23-20 home win over the San Francisco 49ers. It wasn't pretty, but Carson Palmer, who's not having a pretty year in general with his play, you know, he went 30 of 49 for a touchdown, 2 interceptions, was sacked a couple of times. David Johnson, who's been a huge chunk of their offense, he was, you know, I mean, not horrible, but certainly not the player that we've been seeing this year with 19 carries for 55 and a touchdown. I'm here with Andrew, our Jets superfan again. Andrew, you checked this game out, said it was fun, but looks pretty ugly to me.
Yeah, I think the story of the game is that the Cardinals aren't a contender. I think we could safely say that at this point. Their offensive line has just suffered too many injuries, and Carson Palmer can't hold up behind an offensive line like that. And the fact that David Johnson, you just mentioned those stats, 19 carries, 55 yards. I thought coming into this week he was the best running back in football. And again, I don't like to have 1 week decide like something like that, but after what we saw Zeke Elliott do, it's pretty hard to argue that he isn't number one. But David Johnson against the worst rush defense I have seen in a long time, I expected him to at least get 125 yards rushing, and he didn't. And it seemed like Arizona had control of this game the whole time, and then all of a sudden Colin Kaepernick came down the field and tied the game with a little under 2 minutes left. And yeah, give Arizona credit. Michael Floyd made an insane catch on that final drive to keep the drive alive, and they ended up kicking the field goal as time expired. But the fact that this game was this close does not bode well for Arizona's future prospects, considering I believe that the Niners are the worst team in all of football. This is 2 straight pretty good weeks for Colin Kaepernick. Yeah, last week was against New Orleans. But Arizona was the number one rated defense coming into the, at least by total yardage, which you could take that for what it's worth. But they were number one coming into the week, and he played a pretty decent game. So you could say whatever you want about him politically, and especially what after happened this week. I don't want to hear a word of this guy whatever he has to say ever again. I don't believe a word he says. I think he just all out for himself. But like just on the field himself, just on the field, he played a pretty decent game, and the Niners actually showed something today. They showed that pass rush. Eli Harold played pretty well, an outside linebacker. They picked off Carson Palmer. For some reason, Arizona was throwing the ball when they were up 7 with 3 minutes left at midfield. They were throwing the ball, and Carson Palmer threw a pick, and they came down, tied the game, but they couldn't hold on. But yeah, Arizona's the story in this game. They're not for real.
Yeah, I am just sort of curious, though, what the 49ers take away from it, just looking forward, because obviously they're rebuilding. They need talent basically everywhere on this team. But unlike a lot of these bottom-dweller teams that we've been talking about, I don't know that quarterback is really their problem. Colin Kaepernick was basically their entire offense in this game. He was went 17 of 30 for 210 yards and a touchdown passing. He also carried the ball 10 times for 55 yards and a touchdown. The production by guys not named Colin Kaepernick was, by DeJuan Harris and Carlos Hyde. They combined on 18 carries for 28 yards. That was all the 49ers got that was not Colin Kaepernick. So,
right.
I mean, what do you do if you're trying to figure out what to keep and what to throw away on this team?
Well, I actually think running back might be the only position on their team that might be set. Left tackle, obviously, Joe Staley is one of the best in the league. It depends if they want to hold on to him or if they want to keep rebuilding and trade him, get a high draft pick. But I'm just like trying to think. Their defensive line, they spent high draft capital the past 2 years on those two Oregon monsters up front in Eric Armstead and DeForest Buckner. But again, I already said they're the worst rushing defense in football. Navarro Bowman was having a great year, but he got hurt again. Their outside pass rushers, Eli Harold, Aaron Lynch, they're good, but I don't think they're anything special. Rashad Robinson at corner got hurt last week, I believe, but he had a good year up until this point. But this roster is really bereft of talent, and it wouldn't surprise me if it cost Trent Baalke his job. And that might cost Chip Kelly his job. So we might be in for a fourth coach in 4 years for San Francisco. And I feel bad for Chip because, he should have never taken the job in the first place because it was just blatantly obvious that this roster was the worst roster in all of football. And nothing that has happened this year has caused me to change my mind.
All right. Well, thanks again. It sounds like you've reached the end of your Uber track.
Yeah, I'm just about done. I don't know, 5 minutes away from finally getting home and watching the Patriots-Seahawks game. I don't know what the score is, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's like 14-0 pass already. So.
And that is exactly what would please you as a Jets fan.
Oh, yeah, so much so. At this point, I've given up. I have Gronk on my fantasy team, so hopefully Gronk is putting on a show. And we'll see once I get out of my cab.
All right, well, thanks again, man.
All right, later, dude. Have a good one.
Cheers.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for the Next Fan Up podcast. Thank you once again to all the superfans, including Pod Vader himself stepping up and taking the role of the Patriots superfan, coming off of a tough loss on top of it. Thank you, Pod. Once again, thank you to our sponsor, BetDSI.com. Guys, check out our website, nextfanup.wordpress.com. We're posting all sorts of great content there in addition to just the podcasts. You can also find our individual Twitter handles there. I'm at Koreis, that's at Koreis. You should be following the show, at NFU Podcast. Please email us questions, comments, concerns, anything you got. That's nextfanup@gmail.com. Please leave us comments, reviews, all that stuff. We want to spread the word about this show. And on that note, let's turn it over to Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is 4 quarters long.